are listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. This is season 3, episode number 2. JJ Sefton is here once again with my co-blogger CBD and co-host. And our guest, once again, our co-host and or co-blogger, friend, however you want to call him, and man about town, Joe Mannix. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. How's everybody doing?
I'm doing well. It's another day in paradise. Thank you all for having me again.
I'm doing well, too. We had a little taste of snow yesterday, and it sadly melted. I'm bitterly disappointed in Mother Nature. I'm waiting for a nice 15 or 20-inch snowstorm so I can pull out my woefully underutilized snowblower. Because that really makes the suburban experience special.
Well,
anyway,
you're more than welcome to come here to beautiful southern Wisconsin, where we have nothing but snow. Although thankfully, it's the roads are fairly passable; they are not too slick, thank goodness. But there was one snowstorm last week. I was just walking down my driveway, and I just literally went ass over tea kettle, like slipping on the proverbial banana peel, right on my back. It's lucky I didn't crack my head open, but that was you can imagine the expletives flying out of my mouth at that point. But as far as your snowblower goes, maybe, they'll ban that as well as gas stoves and everything else that's going to be banned. So I'd say get an electric one. But I mean, how is electricity generated? That seems to be a mystery to most leftists.
I don't know if anybody noticed, but before we get to the more important topic, I don't remember where in the United States, but a rather large wind generating station fell over. It just went crash, which made me so happy, made me laugh. It's like, these things are huge, hundreds of feet tall. And those blades, I'm sure, weigh many tons. And the idea that sometimes they just fall over, it's delightful.
It's a hell of an oops. And my only hope, I don't know anything about the detail of the story, but I hope it was in a strong gust of wind. If it blew over, that would be the true irony.
and onto some enviro weenie's house, that would be even better. Someone who's at least if it's over somebody's house, you better believe it's the enviro weenies don't want it in their backyard. It's over some hapless hapless schmuck's house who, well, unfortunately, wherever it is, they vote for these people. So what are you going to do?
Yep. All right. So I wrote about the impending demographic time bomb in China last week. And Joe had some very, very interesting comments about it. And that's one of the reasons why we have asked him on today. And I'm going to give him the stage for a few minutes, or the microphone for a few minutes, and let him explain exactly what he was thinking.
Thanks, CBD. Yeah, and I actually don't think it's China's impending demographic time bomb. It looks like it's probably started already. There was the CCP quite quietly last year started doing some restatements of their 2020 census. And what came to the fore in that is two things that are fairly important. One is they overstated their population by 100 million people. So that's a big deal. But more importantly, they said they overstated their population, that 100 million people that don't exist were in their data tables, largely those born during the era of one child. So these are relatively recent births, last 35 years or so. And that means that most of the missing people are women, which means that the sexual imbalance is also probably worse than the prior numbers indicated. And that's important because combine that overstatement. So China probably has more like 1.3 billion than 1.4. Of course, these are CCP numbers. So grains of salt are required anyway, but they did the restatement, which means that they are now acknowledging this problem. So what the real scope of it is sort of anyone's guess. There's a lot of proxies for trying to figure out how big the Chinese population actually is, like energy usage. But as it stands, the CCP's official numbers, they're lower than they were saying. And again, according to those official numbers, their death rate is finally exceeding their birth rate. So that means net population decline. Now, it's very, very small. It's sort of in the noise area statistically. But it's meaningful largely because they've acknowledged it. So what does that mean? And in the very immediate term, I don't think it actually means much. But in the longer term, all of this talk of the Chinese century, I don't think will actually happen because they now have the fastest aging population on the planet. They are well down into fertility trap territory. Their fertility rate is still over one, but it's down like around 1.25, I think, by official measures of children per woman. And that means they don't have nearly enough young people. They have a lot of middle-aged people, and they have a lot of elderly. And the demographic chart doesn't get any better from here. So that a lot of the stuff that we talk about in this country around how do we pay for Social Security, for example, is also a problem in China, which has much worse safety nets, as they're called, than we do. But it's a serious problem for their economy and their ability to project power. I think it's possible we're actually living through a peak in Chinese economic performance, and it's going to be downhill for like a generation, maybe two, until and unless their birth rate recovers, because we very well might end up in 30 to 50 years time with a Chinese population that is half of what it is today. Now, that's still a lot of people. That's still a lot of stuff they can manufacture. It's still a lot of stuff that they can consume. But the balance of how old that population isn't conducive to breakout production or breakout consumption, right? As we age but remain working aged, we tend to produce more. We produce more efficiently. Our time and labor becomes more valuable, and we can consume more. This is all very good for the economy. But then once you start getting old enough and you start thinking about retirement or semi-retirement and you start consuming those savings, if you have them, the consumption base goes down radically. And so there's a lot of people out there talking about, you know, the great fall of China, or the end of China as we know it. And I think that's possible, but nobody ever really defines what that means. Is it China as a reduced economic power? I certainly think that's going to happen. Is it China as the fall of the CCP and the end of the Chinese state as it exists? I think that's less likely. Is it open external or internal war? If that's going to happen, I think it happens sooner rather than later while they still have enough people to really pull it off, people of the right age. But demographically, China is finished. But what's really, and by finished, I mean in a typical human timescale, China is still huge and there are still a lot of people there. China will not cease to exist. But the problem is, if you try to retard this demographic decline starting right now, and what you do works. So whether that's subsidizing people to go have children, outlawing contraception, if you want to take the other side of that coin, or invade Central Asia, slaughter the men and take the women home for wives, whatever it is that you want to do to try to tackle your demographic problem, even if it all works, you have 20 years before the first person born as a result of that effort starts being productive. And you have 30 years before that person becomes significantly productive. So no matter what, it's baked into the pie. That's the problem with the kind of demographic problem that China has. Even if you fix it and fix it today and keep it up, it takes a solid 20 or 30 years before you can really change your fortunes. And a lot changes in geopolitics in 20 and 30 years, especially when you're a country as aggressive and ambitious as Red China is. But Red China isn't alone. Germany's demographics actually look very similar to China's. South Korea's are even worse. Ours aren't great. Brazil's aren't great. France is okay. Argentina's okay. But China's not alone. They're just the biggest. And really big things tend to get noticed, and the effects tend to be more obvious just because they're so huge.
There are a couple of things that just that popped into my head, just, and I'll let CB Delicia jump into this, because I think you have more of a, maybe of an insight into this than I do. But first of all, there's another issue that's going on in the world that I've seen, which is an alarming and confirmation that sperm counts are actually down all over the world. So that's one thing, which is really quite alarming in a certain sense. I don't know if that's the psychosis because of transgenderism or because of cultural things or because of whatever it might be. And then there's also, going back to China, the unrest that was going on there over the last couple of months, which seemingly it's been out of the headlines. We don't know if it's tamped down or has subsided. But the underlying unrest with the Chinese government is still there amongst people. And you have, you know, for at least the last 20, 30 years, this sort of managed capitalism that the communists introduced, I guess, under Deng Xiaoping, people have gotten a taste. The young people have gotten a taste of it and they like it. And so this promotion of it's sort of these Western values of not really wanting to have children brought up, ironically enough, and despite the fact that now the Chinese government wants you to have children, maybe they don't want it and they value a lifestyle that's like here, that's childless and godless and whatever. So all of these things might hamper, Joe, your thesis that of China wanting to promote fecundity among their population. So interesting times ahead here.
What is very, very interesting is that China has aggressively pushed what is essentially modernization and enrichment of their vast middle class, or whatever you want to call it, working class, perhaps, is a better term. And the example in the West was that as people become wealthier, they have fewer children. That is baked into the cake. So China has spent the last 30 years doing exactly what is going to retard their growth in the future. And I think it's very, very interesting that Joe mentioned military expansion. Or expansion via the military to try to fix this existential issue in China. You know, a rational person would say that's ridiculous. You know, this is the 21st century. People don't invade countries to bring women back to their home country. But this is China we're talking about. China will do whatever China wants to do to take care of China. Anyway, I have about 50 points that I have questions about, so I'll let Joe go for a little while longer.
But yeah, to what you were saying, JJ, around, yeah, I think we can safely say Dengism is dead and Xi is a different animal entirely. And he's much less concerned, at least it appears externally. I'm not in his inner council, but it appears he's much less concerned with the economy than he is with reasserting state power. And that's going to cause a couple of problems in terms of manpower. One is if you are already struggling, you're going to be less than enthusiastic about adding children to your struggle. It doesn't eliminate the possibility. Poor people have children all the time, but it does act as an anchor. But importantly, because it also goes back to this modernization starting really in a big way in the 1980s and 90s under Dengism, is they introduced one child. And one child's a thing of the past. It became two child and then three child policy. And birth rates haven't moved because they're running up against a couple of problems. One is that natural reproductive decline that seems to follow industrialization. But then the other is one child came at sort of the worst possible time that China could have done it, because China's development that started after Nixon opened China and they started trading and started getting foreign direct investment in a serious way would have led, as we know, and as we knew then, because we were seeing it in the United States as early as the 1950s, to a natural decline in birth rate. They went and short-circuited what was going to be their last gigantic generation, and they did it with one child. And one child was a combination of things. It wasn't just a policy where you would get fined or imprisoned or subjected to a forced abortion if you violated it. It was also a massive long-term, generation-long propaganda campaign about how you should never consider having more than one child. And if you're really doing your job for the party, maybe you shouldn't have any. And there has been a massive long-term propaganda effort against having children. They've told people for 30, 35 years, this is the wrong thing to do. And you will be less happy and you're not as good for the party and you're not as good for your country if you go and have lots of kids. That's going to take a long time to unwind.
Well, you know, it's like basically now they have to go back on themselves and say, oops, we made a mistake. And I just don't see the Chinese Communist Party, let alone the Democrat Party in America saying, hey, we made a mistake and we were wrong. They would never admit to that. So that's a huge, you know, egg foo young on the face, if you will, for the Chinese.
Yeah, and Xi is having to learn some of that now, because that's what the white paper revolution late last year was. It was finally people getting fed up with zero COVID. And so they just pulled the plug and tried to turn it on a dime. And that's causing all sorts of other downstream problems. This is all new for Xi. Some of it is new in the Chinese experience, at least in the modern era. And there are lots and lots of question marks and they'll eventually get filled in. I just have no idea what that looks like.
Joe, you made a huge number of points. One of the things that jumped out at me was that your description of consumption versus production as people age. in your prime earning years, you're going to consume more because you have the money. And as you age, you consume what you have produced in the past. But it's even worse than that. In your prime earning years, we tend to consume things. We buy things. But as we age, we tend to consume services. So as a society ages, they tend to consume more services, the vast number of things that older people want other people to do for them rather than do them for themselves. And China in particular simply will not have that labor available to them. Even if they have the capital with which to pay for it, they simply do not have they will not have the people. And it's fascinating. Yep. You know, in the United States.
And they also won't have the capital.
Yes, that's true also. But even if they did have the capital, there's no way to spend mm-hmm. it. In the United States, we are importing millions of unskilled laborers, legal and illegal, to hopefully take up that slack, which, of course, is a catastrophe on its own. But China probably won't do that. Although, again, it's China, so who knows what they're going to do.
They have a hard time doing it. They've actually talked about it, at least from what's leaked out. There are certain challenges to doing that in China. One, they have their own problems with food and water security, actually fairly serious problems that are sort of lingering disasters. And they may never come, but boy, they might. But also the Chinese languages are very, very, very hard to learn, which poses a problem for large-scale migration of essentially illiterate indentures to try to hurl into your factory system, and at least if you want to try to integrate them into society. And you can try not to, right? You can build isolated sort of industrial labor camps and put them all there, but that tends not to end well. Eventually, they want to leave.
Well, but they've done that already.
And it creates other problems.
Yeah, they've done that with their
own. Yeah, as prison camps, sure. Yeah. But those are small minorities. In the numbers that it would take to really make a difference for a migrant workforce, it's extremely difficult.
One of the things that I find fascinating is that China simply hasn't admitted to itself that men can have babies.
It is the solution to their problems.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. In the United States, we've clearly accepted the premise that men can have babies. And I think that China, in one fell swoop, can repair much of the damage that the one-child programs have done to their demographics. I think I might suggest that.
Yeah, I think the perfect ambassador for that would be Mr. Peter Buttigieg, or whatever the heck his name is, our wonderful transportation secretary, who knows nothing about transportation and screws up airlines and screws up railroads and everything under the sun and supply chain crises. And his was he? Is he a husband? Is he a wife? Is he a, what do you call him? This guy Chasen, which I find that's quite a good name for him, because the last thing he is chased, especially about his ego. But yeah, he can teach the Chinese about chest feeding to his Turkish delight. Crazy. Let's take a little bit of a break, I think, if we can. And then we'll come back to the conversation. CBD, Joe Mannix, JJ Sefton, back in a minute. We're back. CBD, JJ Sefton, and Joe Mannix with the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast, series 3, episode number 2. And before we leave the woes of the China right now, Joe Mannix wants to just put kind of a bow on the whole thing and summarize it with kind of a frightening prospect, really, but interesting nonetheless. Joe?
Yeah, thanks, JJ. And I realized I didn't really even make a point through all that before, so I wanted to at least summarize it, which is, in my opinion, the way it looks to me, I think the talk of, this will be the Chinese century is off the table. I think they will have significant economic decline, more or less baked in, potentially catastrophic, potentially not, but it's there. So I think the risks of an all-powerful economic China and the risk of things like continued colonization of the third world, these are going to start to taper, and they're probably going to taper fairly quickly. I do think, however, as a result of that, the risk of Chinese military adventurism, probably in their own neighborhood, is potentially more likely as things get increasingly desperate within the mainland. So we'll see over the next 10 or 15 years whether I'm right at all, but that's the way it looks to me today.
Well, with that cheery note, let's move on to another military adventure, a little bit closer to Europe. So the United States, in its infinite wisdom, the Biden junta, in its infinite wisdom, has decided to send 31 of the main battle tank of the United States to the Ukrainian army, because it's very easy to simply take a new tank, train your guys for a couple of hours, where's the clutch, where's the accelerator, and then go kill some Russians. As far as I can tell, that's the plan. The more serious point is that Putin's spokesman has already mentioned that this is direct military intervention in a war, and that's a very, very bad idea. I don't know what the hell the United States government is thinking, but it's clear that they're not thinking much.
This is just, again, this is absolute madness. We are, for all intents and purposes, yes, the Soviet Union does not exist anymore, but the former Soviet Union's thousands of nuclear weapons, from the size of a suitcase to a warhead to a missile that has multiple warheads on it, still does exist. And as I don't know, I think it was maybe Dave in Florida was on one of our previous podcasts was saying, the outcry in Russia right now from the populace is not that Vladimir Putin is waging a war that's unpopular, is that Vladimir Putin is not letting the hammer hang on the Ukrainians. They want them crushed. And if Vladimir Putin goes, as much as we do not necessarily like Vladimir Putin, he's a nasty guy, the next person that comes in line is going to be like one of these crazed generals from the Russian rocket forces who will have no compunction about, pushing a button and vaporizing Kiev or Lviv or whatever cities that are within the Ukraine, or, just to send a message. And then from there, literally all bets are off. So the fact that we are poking our noses into a situation, as bad as it is and horrible as it is, that has no bearing on our own national security interests, is ridiculous. It really, and it's dangerous. Sending these tanks, along with the billions, the hundreds of billions of dollars in military aid, which I'm sure most of it is not necessarily winding up in the hands of the guys who need the guns to shoot the Russians, but in somebody's some oligarch's pocket somewhere, including Mr. Zelensky, is madness upon madness upon madness, and all to basically, feed the stock portfolios of Raytheon and of General Dynamics and of every other military contractor who we have now, as we've depleted our own stocks, we have to now buy more arms in order to replenish them. So it's a self-sucking ice cream cone, if you will, of graft, corruption, and madness if it does lead to a nuclear war or exchange.
If you look at the analog in our country, imagine if Russia sent the T-90 tanks that they have. I think that's their most modern version.
I believe so.
To Mexico, for instance, to fight some incursion into Mexico. It is insanity on a ridiculous scale. We have, as JJ has pointed out, we have involved ourselves in somebody's backyard, and the reaction from Russia hopefully will not be too bad, but my expectation is that it's going to be significant. And as you pointed out, there is no reason for this. Is Ukraine important to us? No, it is not, other than for the graft inherent in their political structure. Is it a geopolitical hotbed? Absolutely. But is it important in the grand scheme of things? No. Russia is going to take Ukraine eventually, I imagine, at least the eastern half of it. And are they going to move on to Poland? No, they're not going to move into Poland. There's no reason for them to do that, and they would lose. So this is simply a masturbatory fantasy on the part of the neocons, on both sides of the aisle, by the way, that America needs to involve itself in every single conflict in the world. And we have proved over the last generation that we fail when we do that, and we are going to fail again.
I have a slightly, perhaps more cynical take on it.
Wow.
Which is, I don't think this is, whatever the initial causes were, and it might be that it was an idiot stumble bumming our way into a war with Russia at the beginning, I don't know. But I think it's decreasingly about Ukraine and increasingly about Europe, particularly Germany. Europe is now entirely dependent on the United States, and the German industrial base is going to suffer catastrophic decline. over the next 2 to 3 years. Major competitor is now gone, and they're firmly in our camp by necessity, if not choice. That's been an outcome. I don't know if that was a goal. But I also think, for some reason that I do not understand, that this is actually about destroying Russia. And I don't know why precisely. I mean, yeah, the Russians are dicks, but that's neither here nor there as far as I'm concerned in my daily life. Where this escalation with tanks gives me pause is, one, I think we're giving them tanks in order to allow the Germans to give them tanks, because a lot of the timeline stuff I've been reading is we're several months out from N1s actually being useful in Ukraine. It's a lot easier to make a Leopard 2 useful in Ukraine. But Germany didn't want to send any of them to Ukraine unless we did the same. So I think we were probably more applying, we were more greasing the skids to get German offensive armor in theater, far more than to get our own stuff there. And the other benefit that the German armor has over the M1 in this context is those supply chains go back to Germany. The M1's supply chains go back to the United States. That is a really much harder thing to deal with. But the specific reasons or even efficacy that the M1 could have in theater, there is another concern I have, which is most of what we have dumped into the Ukraine over the past year has been, if you subtract all the graft and corruption and geopolitical skullduggery that JJ talked about out of the equation, most of what we have been giving Ukraine are weapons for defense to try to repel the Russian invasion. Tanks are a slightly different story. With where they are is near, like by my reading of it, these are offensive weapons. So why are we giving them to Ukraine? What are we after? Because we're calling the shots here. At least I think we are. So why are we giving them offensive armor? And what do we want them to go achieve with it? Is it to retake Crimea or to try to do so? Is it to violate the border and actually start bringing the war to Russia? Because if it is, if there is an offensive purpose to this, counteroffensive, I guess, if it stops being this very defense-focused effort that we've been making so far and starts including offensive weapons and offensive efforts, that is where I start to get more concerned about Russia's trigger finger getting itchy, either in terms of attempting to buffer activity through actions in other neighboring states or through the big button in nuclear weapons, wherever they happen to be aimed. So that's where my question comes in, is why tanks and why now, especially when the terrain isn't really well suited to tank operations? It will be. Their freeze will continue and get pretty bad in February. I think that's an aggressive timeline. Or we could be looking more summertime, which is probably more reasonable given the lead times that all of the military experts have been talking about for tank delivery. But why are we giving them offensive weapons? That's my concern.
My take here is, and I mean, it could it be just, first of all, I just noted that it's 2023. We're now in the spring. I flash back. It's the 80th anniversary of the Battle of Kursk, which was the greatest tank battle in history in Russia. And actually, it took place in the Ukraine, I believe, or right there. But that said, could it be as simple as we're going after Vladimir Putin because the deep state and the Democrats and all the rhinos equate Donald Trump with Vladimir Putin? Could it be just as something as ridiculously stupid as that, that they've dug themselves into this quagmire of Donald Trump is associated with Vladimir Putin, so therefore this invasion of Ukraine is all Donald Trump's fault, or he sort of, as insane as it sounds, greased the wheels for them, and it's just kind of a political cover, you know, along with trying to cover up the graft in the Ukraine that Biden was involved in the first place with Burisma and his son. But could it be something just as stupidly simple and idiotic and insane as that?
Lord, I hope not, but anything's possible.
Yeah, I think that's possible. I don't think that, you know, this seven-dimension chess is being played here. I think that this is mostly reactive. I don't see the United States sending Abrams with the expectation that they will be used as offensive weapons to start a wider conflict or to expand the conflict into neighboring countries. I think it's simply to look like we are doing something significant and something perhaps game-changing in Ukraine. The problem is that it's the game being changed is Vladimir Putin being handed an excuse to do much, much more. And that buys into the idea that, yes, maybe it is the intent is to expand the war. I'm not sure about the supply chain, though, because we certainly have enough stuff pre-positioned in Europe to maintain the Abrams that we have there already. Unless
Which is
we
true.
Pull them all yeah. out. I'm not 100% sure that we haven't, but we had the Abrams was built to counter a Soviet tank thrust into Germany during the Cold War. So that supply chain by definition has to be shorter than from the continental United States.
I think, at least in the short term, for short term parts and resupply.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But to, I guess, Putin's statement on it, which is this is now direct NATO involvement in this conflict, I have a hard time countering that argument.
No, because it's
which
correct.
Is a frightening point.
No, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Vladimir Putin, or his spokesman, is 100% correct. This is NATO involving itself in a war outside of its purview, and nothing good can come of it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we've settled that.
Exactly. You know, I was going to say, actually, I was going to say that, you know, the supply chain for the M1 and being there, obviously, during the Cold War to defend against the Russian invasion into Western Europe from Eastern Germany, from the East, former East Bloc. I think during the Gulf War, a lot of those units and then in Gulf War II were pulled out of Germany and positioned, you know, in the Middle East to fight Saddam Hussein. And then perhaps even from there going into Afghanistan. So I don't know how much of the stocks and the logistics and all of this stuff are actually still do remain in Germany. I'm sure there is obviously a significant percentage of it. But yeah, all of these things are there. But this is, yeah, I mean, and again, you know, you talk about NATO. What is the purpose of NATO? Why was NATO formed? And why is NATO even still necessary? And yet NATO still exists. And as Donald Trump tried to shame them into doing it, we used to fund like 90% of it. So essentially NATO was just an American military force with different uniforms for a couple of people, a couple of different countries. So what is the purpose of NATO? Why is it there? Do we really still need NATO to defend against a Russian or a Soviet invasion? No, we do not. It does not need to exist anymore. And if there is such a thing as this, why was the European Union formed? If the European Union is there for economic purposes as well as defense purposes, they're the ones who should be, you know, soldiering, so to speak, the burden of this. If indeed it is a direct threat to them, which I don't see it as. And then all this talk about letting Ukraine into NATO, that would have been just, you know, that would have really... That is, you know, insane. So
one of the few unalloyed successes of the breakup of the Soviet Union has been the ascendance of Poland. Poland is a wonderful buffer against the Soviet, against the former Soviet Union, against Russia. First of all, because they are an energetic people. They work hard, and even more important than that, they know how to fight and have some experience, by the way, in the Middle East. And most of all, the Poles hate the Russians. You think the Ukrainians hate the Russians? Ask a Pole what he thinks of Russia. Mm-hmm. So the idea that Russia is just going to, you know, is going to consolidate its position in Ukraine and then move on to Poland is laughable. Russia has obviously had enough trouble in Ukraine that the idea that they're going to, you know, turn north and go into Poland is just nuts. It's not going to happen. Now, of course, I didn't think that Putin was going to go into Ukraine in the first place. I thought that he could succeed politically and not need a military intervention. So take what I suggest with a healthy sense of skepticism. But
I think
anyway.
The Polish military, I think, is a heck of a lot more well-armed and well-trained than even the Ukrainian military. Yes. And still the Ukrainians are able to hold them off. So if they go into Poland, plus the fact that you have the Baltic states, which are no fans of the Russians either. So if there's ever an alliance between, let's say, Poland, the Baltics, and also perhaps Hungary, and then the Czechs and the Slovaks. I mean, Russia doesn't have stand a chance against going up against all of them at once, unless they really escalate and decide, well, we're going to toss a couple of tactical nukes just to level the playing field, as it were. It's just, but the fact that we're doing that, this is even happening now, is just so. It's mind-boggling. And then a lot of it dates back to the fact that in 1994 or whatever it was, Bill Clinton guaranteed Ukrainian territorial integrity if they gave up their nukes. So you know, I mean, was it good for them to give up their nukes or not? I mean, well, maybe not. Maybe if the Ukrainians had nuclear weapons, there wouldn't, maybe Putin never would have invaded in the first place. So all of this is a complete clusterfuck that dates back to these, you know, right back to Foggy Bottom, right again, with our experts in foreign policy who are not experts in foreign policy at all. They're just complete eggheads who just sit with their thumbs up their nose and in the faculty lounges postulating things that America stinks. And if we just sort of be nice to people and let them, you know, have their way, everything will be sweetness and light. And here, once again, it's proven to be a complete disaster.
Well, let's move on to a happier topic. I've got a couple of quick hits here. One of them is in the last few weeks, the government came out with their wonderful report that they don't know shit about who leaked the Dobbs decision, the Supreme Court abortion decision. And I've been thinking about this for a little while, and I realized that I don't care at all. It doesn't matter at all. The fact is that the Supreme Court of the United States is a clown show. It has been since Roberts became the Chief Justice. And the idea that this matters in any substantive way is silly. These are childish people playing political games, and they have simply absorbed the lessons of the administration and the deep state. And that is that, yes, you leak when it is appropriate to further your goals. And unfortunately, SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, is now a political arm of the government. So we should not be surprised, nor should we care.
And I agree. I don't care. And it makes something that a lot of us cynical bastards were saying when the investigation was announced, which is they don't want to know, or they already know and aren't interested in having it be public. If they wanted to know who did it, they would have investigated it. And there's surely a paper trail like that. Nobody could ever figure out how this happened is preposterous. And the fact that they haven't means that they didn't want to, which means one of our lovely insiders with some serious juice is the one who did it. Was it Roberts himself? I don't know. Like I said, I don't care. But they didn't find an answer because they didn't want to find an answer.
I echo the sentiments of not really giving a damn about it, because the Supreme Court is yet again, as we have just to hammer at home, is yet another corrupted, with the exception, as we talked about in the last episode, CBD, the wonderful Clarence Thomas, who is perhaps our most brilliant jurist, along with Antonin Scalia, in perhaps 60 years or longer, and then Samuel Alito. These are the two people who are, you know, literally trying to hold things together. But, you know, how can you act in it when everything is corrupt around you? Then there's nothing, you know, you're just sort of, you're pissing into the wind trying to hold things together. It's a miracle that some decisions like Bruin and like Dobbs even were handed down in the first place, because John Roberts is absolutely, you know, he is completely in the pocket of the deep state and will do nothing to upset the apple cart. And it's like I was talking about this morning on the Morning Report, vis-a-vis entitlements and entitlement reform and Kevin McCarthy and so on and so forth. And you have someone like Elise Stefanik who's saying we're going to get to the bottom of and try to clean up the corruption in the bureaucracy. And it's like you don't seem to understand it. It's not that there's corruption in the bureaucracy. It's the corruption is the bureaucracy. The whole thing stinks from top to bottom. And when you have a Supreme Court that exists to, you know, once they can get a majority to rubber stamp the illegitimate decisions of the bureaucracy, who are unelected people writing regulations that have the force of law, despite the fact that we didn't vote for these things. I mean, all of this is just, I mean, again, you throw up your hands and you say, just like, who cares? The whole thing is rotten. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Roberts was the one that leaked it in the first place. If it was an underling, sure, we would have known about it and they would have made him or her the sacrificial lamb and said, how dare you do this, and the integrity of the court and blah, 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 and all that. But again, who cares? I mean, I hate saying that because I do care. But at the end of the day, if we're trying to reverse course and trying to use systems and procedures and protocols that the other side and most people just refuse to ignore in the first place, we're fighting a losing battle. We're not even in the same arena, let alone playing the same game.
Okay, boy, we're really cheery today. So another thing that's been in the news over the last several weeks is that that Joseph Biden seems to be even more craven and disingenuous than we expected, which is saying a lot. He apparently has played fast and loose with classified materials, at least since before he was vice president. They've apparently found classified materials from when he was in the Senate, which doesn't surprise me. Now, you know, we talk about classified materials as if these every single little bit of them are vital national security materials that if the Russians got them, they would be able to, you know, run their tanks into New York City in a matter of days. Well, that's not the case. The fact is that the vast majority of classified materials, trivial. They're simply classified to make other people look important. Government agencies classify things because it makes them look good, and it keeps it private rather than, and it really has very little to do with national security. That being said, the law is the law, and playing fast and loose with some of these materials may not mean much, but the expectation is that a small amount of this material is actually of national security importance. Now, the larger question is, why has the media been allowed to criticize Joseph Biden? What is going on? And, you know, some people are suggesting that it's a ploy to get rid of both Trump and Biden for the 2024 election. I don't know. That's multidimensional chess that I'm not. I really don't believe that there's anybody in Washington who can play that sort of game, because they simply aren't that smart. They're crooks, but they're not that smart.
I definitely think they do want to get rid of Biden. So there's no way in hell that any of this information would have ever come to the fore if somebody doesn't have it in for him, for whatever reasons that there might be, whether they think he's going to be absolutely disastrous against a potential Trump or DeSantis or, you know, pick your opponent campaign. Which to me also is kind of ludicrous, because they've sewn up the fraud machines in the six key swing states that almost virtually guarantee that whoever runs in the Democrat Party is going to win and beat Trump or beat DeSantis or beat whoever, no matter what's going on. But for some strange reason, they want Joe Biden out of there. They figure either he's an embarrassment or I don't know what's going on, but I think that's definitely the key. Whether it's Trump and Biden to be removed, that's anybody's guess. But the fact of the matter is that Joe Biden has been selling his office for 50 years, whether he was dog catcher or a congressman or a senator, whether he was selling out to the crooked credit card people or the mafiosi, or selling out, as we all know, to America's greatest enemies. He is guilty of this. Now, yes, there are documents that get classified for no real reason, or maybe they're, you know, but state secrets. Look what the Clintons did with L'Oreal Space Industries, with what's his name, Wen Ho Lee, with all of these scientists. They're guilty as well. I mean, this is madness. Whether Donald Trump had the right to declassify information and keep them, sure, he had. That was within his purview. But certainly, it was never within Joe Biden's purview as a vice president or as a senator now, even, to like hold on to documents, whatever level of sensitivity they may have been. He definitely committed a crime, and he should pay for his crimes. Will he pay for his crimes? Of course, he won't pay for his crimes. But I think he is going to be eased out. Why he is going to be eased out and what for what purpose, that's anybody's guess, or who is behind it. Again, it's anybody's guess. But the fact that the media is exposing it, even though they're trying to couch it, well, he didn't just do it, but Trump did it as well, or Mike Pence did it as well, is another story. But they definitely want Biden out of there for whatever reason.
I'm going to take the other side of that. I disagree. I don't think this is about getting rid of Joe Biden, at least not right now. Could it be about 24? I guess so. But if you want to get rid of Joe Biden, this is a lousy way to do it. It's big, it's public, it's ugly, it's very embarrassing for the ruling class establishment. There's better ways. He's a sick old man. They could shove him down a flight of stairs if they wanted him gone, and no one would bat an eyelash.
You ever see the movie Woman of Straw? That's like Sean Connery in the wheelchair, or Tommy Udo, you know, shoving the lady down the stairs. But I mean, you know, whatever.
But and I think that this, if I had to pick right now what I think is the most likely thing behind this, it's that they're getting out in front of it. Somebody knew. somebody knew Biden was in possession of classified material. It's probably important classified material, whether it's a tie-in to the laptop from hell or through other sources. I suspect, if I had to make a guess right now, because of how all of this stuff
Which, by the way, it looks like it is tied into the laptop from hell because of Hunter Biden paying the $50,000 rent for the office space, which he never,
he never occupied.
Go ahead, Joe.
And so if this was going to get out in an uncontrolled way by somebody who's not in their club, because I can't fathom how. The thing that's the weirdest to me about this on both the Biden side and the Pence side is that this all came to the fore through lawyers. I'm hiring high paid lawyers to move my documents. I'm a lawyer and I searched Mike Pence's house for classified material. This is weird. This is weird to the point of being insane. This doesn't happen. So it looks a lot to me that this is about getting out in front of it. There, somebody found out about it. Somebody knew it was there. That somebody wasn't in their club. The best way to lock this thing down tight is to go publicly address it, put it all under investigation, spin up a special counsel, pretend you're doing your job, and suddenly all of that material is under lock and key. You have an active investigation that I cannot comment on when it goes to congressional hearings or press interviews. And anybody who releases what that stuff is now is suddenly under a microscope. It's way more dangerous to do that now than it would have been 3 or 4 weeks ago. So I think that this is a reaction to something being out there that somebody learned, possibly, if not probably, from the laptop from hell. And this stuff around Pence is now going to, they're going to try to thread the needle on this and say, yeah, mishandling of classified materials is an endemic problem among high-powered government officials. And if you are in possession of classified materials that you shouldn't be, you should cooperate with the DOJ and we'll get it taken care of. And we're going to retrain our government officials. And now that the time of COVID is over and there's less work from home, this is less of a big deal. So nobody intended anything. This was just the way it worked. The way it worked was wrong. We have fixed it. And this matter is now closed. That's my gut check. I don't think this is about getting rid of Joe, because if you wanted to get rid of Joe, there's way easier and less humiliating ways to do it.
You are breathtakingly cynical. I am. I mean, you're as cynical as I am. I'm really impressed.
You know, I got to say, I'm impressed as well. The cynicism is wonderful to behold. I love it. I feed off of it. I live for it. But, you know, the whole thing with Joe Biden is that maybe they wanted to get rid of Biden beforehand, and he's, because of his dementia, and everyone's feeding him the line, Joe, you're great, you're wonderful, you're the greatest president ever in history. Maybe he actually believes the press and goes, why do they want to get rid of me? I'm innocent. And he's like, they want him out, but he doesn't want to leave, and just his brain is leaking, so they almost have like no alternative than to do this. But Joe, I think you may be right about that, in that they're getting out ahead of something, and for these lawyers to be involved in this and talking about it, something is really, really fishy. But this could have the potential to really bite them in the ass. I think that in trying to get out in front of it, it's you know, you're sort of trying to herd cats here. I mean, they're not going to – I think it's going to blow up on their faces. Something is going to get out there despite the media, despite everything else. They're kind of playing with fire here, and it's going to spread. Yep. They're not going to be able to do it.
Definitely. Whatever's going on, whether they want Joe gone, whether they're trying to do preemptive damage control, whether they're trying to change the overall narrative around classified materials and handling of them, I don't know. But whatever it is, it ain't a low risk exercise.
By the way, just as a note here, and we talked about it, just, you know, Psaki circling back to the Ukraine. Burisma and all of this crap, the Ukraine is like, no matter who is in charge of that government, it's probably one of the most, if not the most corrupt governments on the planet. I would say more than Haiti, but Haiti isn't even a country anymore. It's a Bill Clinton shithole. But and so the tie-in with going to war and supporting, you know, the military industrial complex, supporting Zelensky to go to war against the Russians, or to defend against the Russians, hopefully it doesn't go to war with them. all of this stinks. It just stinks of Biden. It stinks of the military. It stinks of a lot of people that have their hands in the pie beyond just Biden and Hunter Biden, but a lot of other people involved there, like the Kerrys, like the Pelosis, whose children are involved, were also somehow involved in Burisma and in the previous regime as well. So there's a lot of explosive stuff out there, and it's got to be just a lot more than just getting rid of Biden. I think you've sort of changed my mind about that. We're getting rid of him so that it's to cover all of this malfeasance. And it's Ukraine.
I agree. Joe, you actually have changed my mind. And the thing is that I think you're correct about there is something much larger coming on the horizon, because otherwise they have eased the pressure on Trump and his mishandling of supposedly. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that might be an intentional part of it. That was a shit show.
Yeah.
And Garland clearly wasn't too happy about it. That's why it took him days and days of God knows what kind of backroom pressure to go up and take the credit for it. That even might be a piece of it. That was a disaster. And this will be nice way to sweep that away, too.
Yeah.
You mean the raid on Mar-a-Lago being a disaster, just to clarify?
Yeah.
By
expanding it to both Democrat and other Republican politicians, they've shown that Trump was at worst, he made a technical error rather than, selling things to the Russians and whatever the hell they were accusing him of. I have no idea, because it was insane.
It's got to kill them to have to backtrack like that.
Yeah, that's
oh, my God. It's got to totally kill them to all of a sudden not necessarily apologize to Trump, but to say, well, look, they did it wrong, too. So, whatever.
It suggests that Joe is correct, that there's something much larger coming down soon, because if they have to protect Trump, then whatever is coming is big.
And the narrative they're trying, that I'm seeing, that they're trying around Trump is, it's different with Trump because he didn't cooperate with the National Archives and the DOJ, whereas that great guy, Mike Pence, he called them right away and let them know there was a problem.
Sandy Berger just called from hell, and his BVDs are also outraged about Donald Trump and mishandling the documents. God, give me a break with this whole thing, but... Anyways, take a little bit of a break, and we'll come back. And I don't know if we have time for more stuff, but we will regroup back here in the Flash. So stay tuned. We're laughing behind the scenes here. We're laughing through our tears. We really don't have enough time to continue. But Joe Mannix, CBD, gentlemen, fascinating insights into both China, into the Ukraine, into Sandy Berger's underwear and Joe Biden's colostomy bag, and what's going to happen down the pike as this all explodes. Hopefully not his colostomy bag, but the contents thereof of corruption up and down the pike. And somewhere, whatever happens, I think whatever we think of Donald Trump as a candidate, he's got to be laughing his ass off at this whole thing, I think.
I would think so. I mean, as I said, everything is a clown show now. So
total clown show. Gentlemen, CBD, Joe Mannix, JJ Sefton, Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. We will see you on the next one real soon.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks for listening, folks.